This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Great afternoon, Mid-Michigan and beyond at WKAR.org, our live streaming. And you can also access the show later if you want to go back and listen to a particular interview. We're going to have one of those that you may want to hear over and over, and that's Dane Fife, Michigan State assistant basketball coach, and he will be on with us at about 1:25. I say us, my co-host today, Rico Beard of Fox 2 Detroit. Hello, Rico.
Hey, Jack. How are you?
Just fine. You know as much about recruiting in-state as anybody, and certainly in the Detroit area. And we want to put this topic to bed for the week. We've had a lot of discussion over the last couple days about how Michigan State did, why its recruiting class this year was a little different in terms of in-state recruiting. Just three players from the state of Michigan. Can you put that all in perspective?
Did something big happen in recruiting lately? I didn't notice. signing day is always the day that either you think that your team is the greatest or you think that they're a bunch of complete idiots.
No coach ever says his team did anything but sign great players, but the fans obviously.
I would, you know what, how refreshing it would be for one day a coach to say, you know what, this class is so mediocre.
I would love it. I'd buy the guy dinner.
We really didn't do that much on the road. You know, we got busy. Family stuff.
Spent a lot of time in the bar when we were out.
And right. And the next thing you know, it was like, oh my goodness, February is coming up. We forgot to recruit. But everybody wants to know. It's almost like a, you know, whoever gets the most Pokemon cards wins.
Right.
Or whoever collects the most Beanie Babies wins. Your Alabamas, your Floridas, they will always be on top because Alabama has unlimited resources to go out and get whatever. They can get the best players. And if you say no, they can go and get the second best player and make him the best player.
Right.
MSU has certain disadvantages.
Yeah. Not in the same situation even as Michigan and Ohio State.
No, they're not. And it's not to say that they, you know, can't get the top players, but a lot of times it's kind of knowing, you know, where you are.
And it's not to say they can't win with the players they get.
Which they've done.
Which
they have
done.
I mean, you know, as bad as people like to say, oh, well, Michigan State can't recruit this player, they can't get top players, they're still competitive. And last year, despite the 7-6 record, they were in five of those games. They were a field goal or less, meaning you were very close. Now, this year, they went out and they got a lot of play. They got 18 players.
They got a kicker.
They got a kicker who could be a four-year starter. He could be a four-year starter. He's going to go in and I guess have a kickoff with Muma to see who's going to get the spot. But what you'll find out is with Michigan State, I tell a lot of people, you don't come in and play right away. So basically the entire class will get redshirted. So if you're a Spartans fan, you want to pull out the sheet from last year.
Right.
Because
right.
These are the guys that you're going to see for the first time that you got all excited about or, you know, kicked the dog about last season.
Right.
Now you get to see what an Edmondson can do. Now you get to see what a Demetrius Cox, a Jamal Lyles.
Right.
You get to see what all of these people can now do and to see if they lived up to the hype. And the beauty of redshirting an entire class, that class gets to get bigger, faster, stronger, learn the playbook, get acclimated into the system so that you're not hitting that freshman wall. You learn, you're the scout team players, you learn a lot of things. And to me, it adds a half a star to whatever your star ranking were because you get a chance to learn.
Sure.
If you're an offensive player, you get a chance to go up against the fourth best defense in the nation every day in practice. You get a chance to cover different receivers if you're on defense, to go up and try and stop a Le'Veon Bell, a top running back, or Deion Sims, a top tight end. So you get a lot of valuable experience that instead of just sticking you out there raw – and having you make your mistakes, you get to make your mistakes and nobody gets to notice.
Well, and you've heard the same things I've heard over the last few weeks, certainly the last 24 hours. How come Michigan State didn't do this? Why didn't such and such school do this? They all have their own way of evaluating players, and they try to find players that fit their system. Would Michigan State have loved to have some of the players who went to Michigan and Ohio State? Absolutely. And probably more so than the other way around by a great degree. But that doesn't mean that you can't be successful with the players you get if you find the right guys and develop them, and you mentioned how close some of these losses were, how many of them could have been changed with a kick. And the first name that Mark D'Antonio mentioned last night on the Big Ten Network was Michael Geiger. We mentioned the kicker. He's been ranked by some scouting services as the best place kicker in the country. Certainly going to have a chance to come in and compete, as you said, against Kevin Muma. So with that and a couple of other players at positions of need, certainly the Spartans needed running backs, and they may have found a quarterback of the future.
They may have, but then again, I think last year you could say the same thing about the quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
with Tyler O'Connor. He's just as good. I mean, you know, Damian Terry's coming in. He put it this way. If Damian Terry had committed to Michigan, his name would be plastered all over. He only threw for 50 touchdowns. He only ran for 12 touchdowns.
Right.
I think he threw like 3 or 4 interceptions.
And he led his team to a 15-0 record in state championship.
They won the state title in like the top division.
Yeah.
So if this kid goes to Michigan, if he goes to Ohio State, he would have been the greatest quarterback of all time.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I was talking with Tom Lemming. I actually spent some time with him in suburban Chicago. And he was explaining it, and he admitted that certain schools have a cachet that adds star points or rating points, whatever, to a recruit. And they know that if Florida is recruiting a school, if Alabama is, if Notre Dame is, it's going to make that recruit look better. And if you find someone like a Kirk Cousins, like a Le'Veon Bell, like a Trenton Robinson just played in the Super Bowl, Garrett Celek, these are guys who became very good college players and in some cases have gone on to the NFL. Nobody was making a big deal about them. 6 years ago, people were saying, who's Cousins?
Yeah, Keyshawn who?
Keyshawn
yeah.
Martin.
Perfect
example. P.J. Cunningham lived. He could have walked to Ohio Stadium and they wouldn't give him a sniff.
All right. But it ends up that sometimes it's the evaluation, and you know, it's a catch 22 because do you want the Yeldons of the world? Sure you do.
Sure.
But if you get Le'Veon Bell, are you complaining? No,
no,
you're not.
You know how you know when a coach has a bad recruiting class? 4 years later, he gets fired. That's how you judge it.
That's a good way of putting it. I mean, because Jack, I mean, everybody wants that we're number one so you can stand around the water cooler. But you're right. I often say, tell me what this class will look like. In 3 years, you'll know whether you did a good job or bad job. And, you know, I hate to, you know, to go that route, but, you know, certain teams will parade, hey, we signed this guy and this guy's
right.
going to be the greatest. And, you know, you don't have to look too far. I remember the entire Will Campbell thing and
yeah.
You know, how'd that turn out? I mean, right now.
Had a decent senior year.
He had a decent senior year, but not a 5-star senior year.
Right,
I mean,
right.
The biggest impact he made on the Michigan program was the car he jumped up and down on. That's the biggest impact that he made.
And Michigan State's had guys like that,
right,
too, in all
they
fairness.
Have. Right.
So some of their 4-stars haven't played as well as their 2-stars.
You get guys who come in, but, you know, but then you get Mekhi Reynolds from Michigan State, and I think has had a better 4 years than Campbell. Reynolds comes in as a 3. Campbell comes in as a 5. It's all about the evaluation and the need. And a lot of the 5-star guys want immediate impact. They want to play right away. At MSU, one of the good things about Michigan State, and I'm not trying to be a sunshine blower, but the good thing is there's a lot of depth at positions
yeah.
where
yeah.
you're not going to come in. Now, the one concern that I do have with Michigan State recruiting is offensive linemen.
Yeah.
For some reason or another, they just strike out.
Why is that?
I wish I knew.
Because it doesn't happen at some of the skill positions.
No.
And it doesn't happen at linebacker.
No, linebacker, corners, safeties. But I think it's a catch-22. I think that players see, okay, you just sent Trenton Robinson to the league.
Yeah.
So maybe I want to come play there. You just sent, you know, you're sending Le'Veon Bell. You're sending, you know, Deion Sims.
Right.
But offensive linemen, not so much. So it's like, well, if I had to choose between the two programs, I'm going to go with the program that's sending more O linemen to the league. And
right.
it's a vicious circle.
The other aspect to that, though, is if you are looking at a school like a Michigan State, and I don't mean just Michigan State, but a school that doesn't have 6 4-star offensive linemen coming in every year, you say, you know, I got a great chance to play there by my second year.
You do, but you're going to have to get a guy who's not afraid to blaze his, be a pioneer and blaze
right.
their own trail.
Right.
And yeah, if you come to Michigan State, you redshirt your freshman year, it's possible you can be a four-year starter.
You know, we talk about recruiting rankings. Rico, one of the things I always like to point to are the Wisconsin Badgers. Now, they've been to 6 Rose Bowls in the last 20 years, and they have never had a recruiting class ranked in the top 30.
Wisconsin, Stanford Cardinals, they're not bringing in top classes. Boise State Broncos, they're not bringing in top classes, but what they do, you recruit to your need, you recruit to your style, and you stick to that, and you resist the urge to, you know, keep up with the Joneses, and you stay in your lane, and you do your thing, and with that, you get success.
Let's go out to our phones, and the number to call, 877-WKAR-870 or 355-WKAR, and let's go to line one. JC in Lansing, you're on the show.
Hey, how you doing, Jack?
Good.
First of all, I'd like to ask, are you maybe going to be a permanent on WKAR?
No, there may be a major announcement on this show tomorrow, but it won't be me. I will be here today and tomorrow with my old partner, Tom Crawford.
Well, I would have put my name in the hat for you. You know, you're very informative, and you're also you put a little humor in things. I love that.
Well, thank you. Check's in the mail.
Talk about recruiting, you know, the coaches say they don't want to put too much emphasis. All the talk show people say, well, you don't want to put too much emphasis on recruiting. But if you don't get the players, then, you know.
You've definitely got to get the players. The question is, who's evaluating who the players are? Because I did those recruiting rankings for a long time for the Lansing State Journal, and I can tell you I knew less than every football coach in the Big Ten.
Okay, I want to ask you something else, something that's really boggled my mind.
Okay.
LaDante Hinton from Eastern.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an old Quaker myself.
Yep.
I just couldn't imagine why State didn't go after him or he told them no off the bat. I'd like to know the fly-in-the-wall story of why. I mean, that kid's tearing it up in the Big East.
Yeah, he really is. LaDante Hinton was an amazing high school rebounder. He was.
Is he in his second year now?
Yeah.
You know what I think it was? At the time, you had to choose between LaDante Hinton and DeJuan Wagner. Because people fail to remember, he was a part of this team. He's not, I mean, DeJuan Anderson playing
DeJuan Anderson.
Wagner.
Yeah, right.
DeJuan Anderson was a part of the recruiting class, he never made it at Michigan State.
In fairness, there were also some academic concerns. There were some other issues.
I was worried, it kind of made me think, if he could get in Providence, which they thought was a prominent academic school,
You know what happens with that, JC? I'll tell you. There's an entry standard for students, and there's an entry standard for student-athletes. And at most schools, the entry standard for student-athletes is, can you be eligible? Can you pass the clearinghouse?
Can you sign your name? What color is blue?
Can you do what you absolutely have to do? In fact, going way back, I don't know if you remember the magazine Inside Sports, but they did a great story about some of the schools that have huge differences between what ordinary students have to do on an ACT score or SAT and what an athlete would have to do. And I think when you have a big gap like that, it just makes it harder for the athlete to integrate than unless they want to stay with themselves.
Providence is a very well
respected academic school, sure.
Undertones, I heard it was academics, but I'm thinking, well, if he's getting Providence, he could definitely get Michigan State.
Well, every school looks at that a little bit differently, and what Providence is willing to accept for a basketball player may not be willing to accept for your son or daughter.
That's true. Providence may be trying to get back into the tournament, so maybe they dropped their standards a little bit, not saying that that's what happened, but, you know, it may have happened.
Yeah, you know, also I'd like to hear a coach, you know, before a game when Duke was playing Prairie View or something like that.
Yeah.
Go, you know, we're going to stomp them.
Don't hear that too often. Hey, JC, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. We have a few calls on the line here. We want to try to get to them and clear the lines out for Dane Fife toward the bottom of the hour. Let's go out to line two. Todd from Lake Orion, you're with us.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Todd.
I want to change things up slightly here. I know the recruiting is a big thing, and a lot of people want to talk about it. In the past, I have wanted as well. I want to talk about Michigan State basketball.
Sure. We're going to do that the last 40 minutes, but go ahead.
And again, you guys know a lot more about basketball than I do, and the coaches know a lot more than you guys, and I know you're willing to admit it. And I guess maybe what I really need you to do is to be a psychoanalyst and lay me on the couch and try to explain some things to me.
Yeah.
I understand where Michigan State basketball is, 19-4, tied for second in the best conference in the country, a top 10 program. And good God, you've probably got to be a little off your rocker to look at that situation and nitpick it or find problems with it, which is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's not just 18 points in the half of a game.
Right.
It's not certain games where they turn the ball over 20 times, which you guys have seen a lot of. Mm-hmm. It's not just players who will look like they're all Big Ten performers in one game and then not even know that they're on the court the next game. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, and I realize I'm probably in a small minority.
No, I don't think you're in a small minority.
I think at this point, I hearken back to Drew Sharp. They're the worst 19-4 team ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't win the way that people want them to win. They're not the Kentucky team of last year or the Carolina team of a few years ago where they just blow people out.
Right.
They just do just enough to score 1 point more than their opponent. And it's inconsistent at time. It's head-scratching. I mean, heck, Jack, you were there last night.
Yeah.
Izzo comes into the press conference, and he's speechless. He's like, I don't really know what to say, guys.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Well, they shoot 24% in the first half, 66.7 in the second. But this team, for whatever reason, finds just enough basketball to win the game. Maybe they're playing to the level of the competition. But last night, you talk about the 20 turnovers a game. Michigan State had five turnovers last night. So they make it happen, and I thought it was a pretty gutty effort considering how banged up they were. You have to remember that a lot of people thought Brandon Dawson wouldn't be playing until March. I don't know if Gary Harris could pass a lot of physicals. He's really gutting it out.
He's been healthy the entire season. So, I mean, it's not sexy, but they're winning, and when you look at it, they've won 19 games, and they've knocked off some pretty tough opponents.
Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it, Todd. We have one more call on the line here, and we're going to go to break and come back with Dane Fife. Let's go up to Canada. Jody in Toronto. Hello, Jody.
Hey, how you doing, Jack? Jody McCullough here.
Hey, Jody.
A couple things, Jack. When you talk about, I don't remember LaDante Hinton being mentioned by Michigan State. I thought, it was Penn State. It was Iowa State later after he had committed to Dayton.
Remember,
he was supposed to be at Dayton, and then Gregory left.
That's right.
And, I know Utah was on him, Penn State, Dayton, those schools, but I don't remember Michigan State ever being mentioned. Not saying that they weren't, but I just don't remember it. My other thing, when you talk about the team, what concerns me is that I don't see them, I shouldn't say don't, but it's very rare that you see them get easy baskets.
Yeah.
They don't really play up on people to where they're creating turnovers. Dawson did it twice and got some steals. It seems
Dawson
like
does it about once always a game. He kind of poaches a passing lane and gets a steal.
Yeah, but what you don't see is a lot of the fast break basketball, and then if you get nothing, you set up and get to run your offense.
Jody, do you know how many steals Michigan State had last night? This is, I think, what
probably
Rico was saying about him being deceptive. Michigan State had 9 steals. Minnesota had 2.
Well, but like I say, after they steal the ball, though, they turn around and walk up the court.
But the thing is, I'm convinced that I think that Spartan fans are a little spoiled in thinking that every team is a Final Four team, and you don't know until the end. But you got to just occasionally just take a step back and look and say, as bad as we think that this team, you knocked off Kansas, which doesn't look as good after last night.
Right.
But, you've gone to Wisconsin and won there, a place that not a lot of people have gone.
Right.
You've beaten Ohio State. You've done a lot of good things. It's not sexy. It's not consistent. There's no one who's going to be in the National Player of the Year conversation. But somehow or another, this team finds a way to win games.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, Rico, I agree with that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking the kids because the kids are playing. But all I'm saying is that once you set a bar,
right?
Okay, let's take it from player and player. Once you set a bar, to win national championships, that becomes the goal. That's why you go after the Jabari Parkers, the Dawsons, the Harrises, those kinds of young men. You know, that's, you know, again, it's not a knock. It's just a matter of fact that, you know, maybe we have gotten spoiled. But, you know, when you're a winning program, people in Alabama are spoiled for Alabama football.
Sure. Thanks so much, Jody. I really appreciate the call. We're going to go to break here, and then we're going to talk with Dane Fite. But, Rico, before we do that, I just wanted to say this team isn't going to beat anybody 114-63. Those days are over. That's not what this team is all about. But, as you mentioned, there are an awful lot of teams that would love to trade places, not just this year, but with this program. When you think about the Final Four, six Final Fours since 1999, no other school in the country's done that.
And, Jack, I mean, take into account your worst loss is UConn, who probably is, what, 25th to 30th in the country. I mean, that's your worst loss. You lost to, you know, teams that are in the top 25. I mean, you're 19-4. Will they go to the Final Four? Time will show. I mean, I've seen worse MSU teams make it to the Final Four.
Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
As President Obama's pick to lead the CIA heads up to Capitol Hill for his confirmation hearing, a Justice Department memo leaked that justifies the extrajudicial execution of American citizens if they're terrorists. I'm Neil Conan. Drones, waterboarding, and the CIA, John Brennan testifies before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation, coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
This is Scott Pohl with the weather. A winter storm warning until noon tomorrow. A chance of snow and freezing rain. The high 32, the overnight low 25 with 3 to 5 inches of snow. Tomorrow, snow likely until midday with little new accumulation. The high 28. Saturday, mostly sunny and a high in the upper 20s.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here with my co-host Rico Beard of Fox 2 in Detroit. And we're going to be here for the next 33 minutes. I'd like to bring in our special guest, Michigan State assistant basketball coach, Dane Fite. Hello, Dane. How are you?
Jack, Rico, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
You're doing a lot better today than you were at halftime last night, right?
Could you tell?
So how does a team that's so banged up at guard, has got a backup point guard in street clothes, got a shooting guard who can't move any faster than Rico, and this team has five turnovers for the game. How does that happen?
Yeah, as you guys know, that's something we've been really focusing on, is knocking down the turnovers. We knew that Minnesota is a team that likes to pressure. They like to play the passing lanes, and I think that was definitely one of the emphasis going into the game. Make sure we keep the turnovers down, because what Minnesota did very well, and what they do very well, is they convert the turnovers into points, and that's something that they're very good at. But I think our guys executed the game plan from that standpoint. Didn't take many risks, played within themselves, and took care of the ball.
Coach, I don't know if you've gotten any updated word, but any word on Appling's injury?
I think he's going to be fine. I'm not exactly sure what happened to his shoulder, but I think he's going to be fine. He'll practice today. Probably be a little tender based on, you know, what I saw, what you guys saw. Looked like it was pretty painful, but I think he'll be fine and be ready to go for sure.
He looked pretty good in the locker room after the game last night. Now, Gary Harris and Travis Trice weren't ready to go dancing. But in terms of what Gary Harris did last night, I thought it was pretty heroic stuff. Not only to be the leading scorer with 15 points, to hit four threes, to have four assists, to make some key baskets when he couldn't move very well in the locker room after the game. Can you talk about playing over pain and the kind of effort we saw from him last night?
Well, one thing that Coach Izzo's always enjoyed is recruiting kids that play football. And you're right, Gary looked like the leaning tower of Pisa walking out there. Then all of a sudden he'd catch and rise up and hit a three and give himself a little jolt of adrenaline. And then the next thing you know, a couple minutes later, he'd be back to that leaning walk. And, you know, like I said, I think Gary has a special, unique toughness that he's able to play through pain. But, you know, football, I think, has certainly aided that. And I think a bigger part is Gary wants to win so bad, and he understands whether he's going to hurt the team or help the team. And obviously, he really helped the team. You know, he's so efficient, guys, that he just knows exactly where to be without exerting an exorbitant amount of energy. And so I think that helps too. And Keith's the same way. We've got quite a few guys that are able to play through pain.
Everyone was taking such note of the backcourt woes last night in terms of the physical condition. They forgot that Adrian Payne got smacked in the face. And some of his teammates, of course, were kidding him in the locker room that would only help his appearance.
I agree with that. We may have to bloody the two of your noses. That might help. It might hide your face, your swollen nose. I'm sure my wife feels the same about me. But I think it was a very physical game, and I think it makes it hard on the referees. But we had a good group last night that let us play. And you can bet that Nix was exhausted, and certainly Trevor and Bakaway was exhausted. Those two big hosses banging on each other down in the paint. Then you got to feel for the cheerleader that Mr. Nix fell on. We think she's okay.
Yeah,
it was just a physical game. Even the cheerleaders were getting squashed.
Can they get workman's comp for that if they get?
there's a nice pick travel around the internet world right now, and we'll be certain to post it in our locker room. But yeah, it's happy. Everybody's okay. But it was just like I said, a lot of banging. That was part of the scouting report. Just two physical teams going at it. And an excellent Big Ten game with a bunch of good athletes and basketball players. And I think other than Keith's shoulder, I think we're relatively unscathed. Gary's back injury is going to be constant. I don't think Minnesota injured it more. I think it's a heck of a game to be a part of for sure.
Talking with Michigan State assistant coach Dane Fyfe. Coach, not to bring up something negative, but have you guys noticed the difference in Payne's intensity since the fight that they had at Penn State?
Same as you guys. It's quite a phenomenon. That's something that, gosh, the running joke is somebody needs to sock Payne before every game. And but you're right, Rico. He's been outstanding. He's in fact, he's much more receptive. Not that he was fighting us before, but I think he's putting much more thought into what the coaches are saying and trying to, really learn and allow himself to be taught. And he really has, and we're really proud of him for that. And he's made our team a better team. And it doesn't take a genius to see that.
Adrian Payne is going to be featured Saturday night, by the way, on The Journey. And Kevin Shaw, a Spartan alum, was here last night. He's an Emmy Award-winning videographer shooting footage for that. And we were talking a little bit about the story. And it's going to center a lot on Adrian Payne's development as a person. When he came in, there were some questions about how he would adjust, how he would fit here. Now here he is, recognized for some academic achievements. He wears those glasses around, and some people barely recognize him.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the differences in players, Dane, I want to ask you about the differences in halves. And the last two games, Michigan State has struggled in the first half and then gone in and changed into the Superman costume. Or the coaches have done an amazing job at halftime. Somehow the energy level's been totally different.
Yeah, you're right. You guys are seeing what we're seeing, and that's something that obviously if we're going to contend for this league as we move into the final eight games, we've got to change that quick. And we're having a tough time with energy to start the game. And I think we've got to look at our lineups. I think we've got to look at what the minutes we're giving certain guys. We've got to look at practices to see what we're doing. Are we wearing them out? Are we not preparing them well? All those things as coaches we've got to eliminate if it's something that we're doing as coaches. And then we've got to dig in and see what from the player's standpoint is what's happening in their lives. And so I think that all those elements have to come into play because – if we really, truly want to win a Big Ten title, that must change. The last three games, we've been, borderline awful. And I know our guys feel it. The fans feel it. We coaches feel it. It's got to change. And I think it's a communal issue. It's coaches. It's players. And we might even ask the fans to, maybe turn it up even more and try to help us from that standpoint.
Coach, how valuable does Denzel Valentine become? And, you know, just, you know, you have a concussion with Trice, and you really don't know what's going to happen with Appling's shoulder. How valuable is he for this upcoming stretch?
He's crucial, and I think, you know, I've been reading. I know that Denzel's feeling much more comfortable with his role and understanding the focus that he has to have being a freshman. And it's crucial because we're going to have to ask him to handle the ball a lot more until Trice gets healthy. And that's one thing that he hasn't necessarily had to do throughout the season. But, you know, as the season goes on, the pressure's turned up, not just, you know, mentally and emotionally, but teams are looking, they're scratching and clawing for wins, and they're tight games. And so Valentine's role is increasing, not just by minutes, but I think, you know, the pressure, you know, that he'll feel. But I think he can handle it. He's a two-time state championship guy. He's grown up in a basketball family. These are the things that, you know, hopefully Denzel's prepared for all of his life. And I think the type of kid he is, he'll be excited to embrace it.
Dane, there aren't a lot of easy nights in the Big Ten. You've got a bunch of tough ones coming up. You have a tricky game at Purdue Saturday night. They certainly want a piece of Michigan State. Then you've got a home-and-home with Michigan. You've got a game with Indiana here, a payback opportunity, and then a game at Ohio State. As you look at this, is this a deal where one team could break away and win the Big Ten with three losses, or would you expect every team to keep beating each other?
Well, I think that the home teams will take care of business at home, at least, you know, from our standpoint. Hopefully that happens. As you look at the top tier of teams, the top four, maybe top five, the home teams will generally take care of home, maybe with a few upsets here and there. But I do think, you know, I think I read where, you know, Coach Beilein said it might be five or six losses that win the Big Ten. I might be off on that. But I do think, you know, three, four, five losses somewhere in that area. But I also expect the home team to take care of home as you start to see the separation of the top tier teams. But you mentioned it's a crucial stretch for us. And, you know, we've talked about Valentine. We've talked about being healthy. We've talked about having much better starts. Those are all things that come into play as the Spartans look to hopefully make a good run down the stretch.
Talking with Michigan State assistant coach Dane Fife. Coach, do you get a chance, I know, through planning for the next game and recruiting and things like that, just to kind of watch some of the other Big Ten games that are going on and kind of appreciate this season in the Big Ten?
No question, Rick. This is exciting. I mean, there is an unbelievable game, a fun, action-packed, exciting game with things on the line every night in the Big Ten, and that's, you know, pretty unique. And on TV, HD, it's a heck of a deal. I mean, can't help but look at it from a fan's perspective at times and most of the time, especially because we're in the hunt and we hope to stay in the hunt.
And it isn't just the top teams that are going to battle. We saw Michigan at Indiana in a national game that got a tremendous amount of attention last Saturday, and then Michigan defeating Ohio State in a tremendous overtime battle Tuesday night. But last night, I thought Iowa had Wisconsin two or three times and let that one get away.
Without a doubt. And you know, I think that every single game counts. And you know, you take Iowa, who's struggling. You take Penn State, who's struggling. But you can see them building. Iowa is getting very, very close. I think you and I talked about it last night, Jack. They are so close to blowing up and becoming a great team and breaking out and really becoming another Big Ten title contender. And Penn State, you know where they are if they got Tim Frazier. But nevertheless, they're also another team on the rise. And so you sit there and watch those teams, you can't help but think what's to come for those two programs. You know, it's an unbelievable time for the Big Ten. And it's funny because 2 years ago everybody's talking about how the Big Ten's down, they have no players, they're slow, they're a bulky, gaudy league that just, you know, knock down, drag out every night. We've got plenty of first-rounders, and we certainly have plenty of national title contenders this year, no question.
Coach, I know you're the MSU assistant, but before there was a Victor Oladipo at Indiana, there was another guy who was a defensive player of the year. I think his last name was Fife. Jack, can you help me out on this?
You're not talking about Dugan Fife or Dan Fife, are you? Yeah.
do you ever talk with Oladipo and helping him and possibly becoming defensive player of the year?
I've never spoken to him. I may have met him one time, maybe two times, but I'm a little nervous, guys. He's on track to break my all-time steals record. I'm not one of those guys that's going to go out in public and say I'd be honored to have Victor Oladipo break my record. I like to keep that record. I didn't do much at Indiana, so I'd like at least like to have my name in the program somehow. I guess I'm a pretty selfish guy from that standpoint, but as it is, Victor's an unbelievable player. He certainly is excited to watch and got the utmost respect for him. I really do. I take pride in having a guy play the way he does, especially at my alma mater. But nonetheless, we're thinking about beating him every day.
You know, Dane, it's funny. Last night I was talking to someone in the locker room about Victor Oladipo and Aaron Kraft, maybe as good an on-ball defensive pair as the Big Ten has ever had at the same time. And just as I turned around, there was Travis Walton. And he was a pretty fair defensive player. He had that look on his face. The last time I'd seen that was when he physically ejected someone who dared to step on the logo in the middle of the locker room. And the guy was about 240 pounds at the time, and he was about 120 when Travis got done with him.
Yeah, I think, you can also throw Keith Appling into that mix. But I coach teams that went against Travis Walton, and we would always run plays away from Travis just to keep him off the ball. And I think that I'm sure there's teams doing the same things with Kraft. I'm not sure that Oladipo is at the Kraft level, but he's nonetheless one of the top defenders in the country.
Kind of getting back to this year's team, for the two times that you guys have been out-rebounded, it's been Minnesota. Is that a concern, or is that just an anomaly of, for some reason they just out-rebound us?
Well, I think there is a slight anomaly in some of that stuff, but it is a concern. And it's definitely, one of the things that Coach has pointed out, in his tenure here, we haven't been out-rebounded that he can remember the way we're being out-rebounded, or at least the rebounding margin is sliding almost, it's almost close to even, and that's a frustrating part. But, you guys talked about it, I've talked about it. The Big Ten's pretty good, guys, and, there is going to be some slippage. But one thing we will concentrate on, and Coach Izzo has made it very clear, is there's not going to be much slippage anymore in terms of what Michigan State basketball is all about. And I think as we look forward and move forward to the second half of the Big Ten season, that's our focus, is to make sure we understand and are very clear with the staff as well as the players that we're going to play Michigan State basketball and we're not going to change for anybody. And then we're not going to allow any leeway in terms of, what we're trying to do and what we do best.
We can talk about shooting percentages and a rebound differential and turnover margin, but there is one set of numbers that's irrefutable, and that is 19-4, 8-2 in the Big Ten. Dane, good luck to you Saturday night at Purdue as you try to get that 20th win.
Okay, thank you, guys.
All right.
See you later.
You know what else is interesting with that, Rico? Michigan State has a chance to do something that is extremely rare. Saturday, they could get their 9th conference win. That would be the 20th year in a row that Michigan State has not had a losing conference season. Every other school in the Big Ten has had at least 4 in that span. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKAR AM 870.
On the next Fresh Air, Bradley Cooper talks about his Oscar-nominated performance in Silver Linings Playbook and lots of other things, including the really dark adult movies he grew up watching with his father, why he wanted to be a soldier when he was young, how he sometimes cries like a hyena, and why he hates it when photographers ask him to do those sexy man poses. Join us.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio.
There's a winter storm warning until noon tomorrow for snow and freezing rain. Today's high 32, tonight's low 25 with 3 to 5 inches of snow. Tomorrow, snow likely until midday with little new accumulation, the high 28. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high of 29. This is Scott Pohl.
We want to mention that we do have a pair of tickets. And Aaron, we're going to give these away tomorrow, right? We're going to have call-ins today and tomorrow for these Michigan-Michigan State tickets. I have them in my hand here. And these are tough to get, Rico. I don't know what they go for on the market right now, but everyone's going to want to be there next Tuesday night. And you can register. I forget. You can register. Call 884-4783. That's a 9 o'clock tip-off next Tuesday, 884-4783. And give us a call if you'd like to chat for the next about 14 minutes. And the number 877-WKAR-870 or 355-WKAR. Rico, as you look around the Big Ten thus far, now we're past the halfway point, what's the biggest surprise to you?
That it's still in doubt. There's no team that's, I don't think, is going to run away with this. You're looking at maybe try champions, maybe there may be even a four-way tie.
Would you be surprised if Indiana won this by more than one game?
No, I would not. I wouldn't be that, but then again, I wouldn't be shocked if Michigan won by more than one game. I wouldn't be shocked if State won or if Ohio State came from the pack. Wisconsin, that may shock me. But here's the thing.
Wisconsin did get that
every year, people write off Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I've learned, stop. They will always be in the upper echelon of the Big Ten. They may not get the greatest recruits, but Bo Ryan can get those guys to play, and they just win. It's not pretty. You don't set your DVR to make sure that you watch the game, but in the end, somehow or another, Wisconsin's always in the mix. So I think that right now, the fact that no one has separated from the pack shows me that if somebody flat out wins the Big Ten, I think that that's more of an honor than winning the Big Ten tournament this year. If you win 18 games and you were all alone at the top,
right?
Screw what happens in the Big Ten tournament. To me, that's the true Big Ten champion.
Yeah, and I think Tom Izzo would agree with you. It really is a survival test, the Big Ten race and 18 games. Not many conferences put you through that kind of a gauntlet. Let's go back out to our phones. Line one. Hello, Bob. How are you?
Hello. Well, kind of down and disappointed, Jack.
Okay.
You made the announcement to take the suspense out of it that they're not going to announce tomorrow that you're going to be the new host. I was hoping you would.
Well, they're not going to announce, maybe they're not going to announce anything, but I'm going to have some news for you tomorrow that I think you'll like.
Well, but you said it won't be you, and that's okay, well, hey, comment and a question. The comment,
okay.
I am concerned at our bench. You
yes.
got three guys last night. Come in, don't give you 0 points. At the same time, you got Knicks and Payne in the first half, 0 points. But, boy, if we don't get something out of Costello and Bird and the other one, boy.
Ghana.
That could hurt us. Ghana, yeah, that could hurt us. And then my question is this. Do you have any idea why the NCAA made the change in the introduction of the players to only announce the team the whole team at a time? Because I think that it was good sportsmanship to have the players come out and shake hands.
I didn't know that it was something across the league. I noticed that they are now doing that at MSU. I didn't notice it. Did you, Jack?
Yeah, I did, and I really can't clarify much other than the fact that so many schools now have gone to this video presentation before the players are introduced and they want to build up the enthusiasm in Indiana's. It seems like it takes forever.
Yeah, I heard it's pretty good.
It's very good. And, you don't break it up and you want to introduce one forward and then the other forward, but they'd rather do it team by team for whatever reason. I guess some schools are dimming the lights for it. It's more like the NBA. Everything comes around to the pros eventually.
That's well, Indiana true. Looked like Midnight Madness the other night.
What about the bench? I think that Bob has an interesting point there, Rico.
I think that you're right. Right now, if the starters aren't doing their job, I mean, especially with Trice injured and, you know, I guess Denzel coming off the bench now.
Yeah.
The other guys have yet to do anything. Costello, this may turn out to be the year you should have redshirted him.
Yeah.
Ghana, between Ghana and Bird, you kind of almost forget they're on the team. Russell Bird has a following of people who are waiting for him to hit that shot. He's got kids dressed up as the Angry Birds character in the Iz Zone, just waiting for that shot to fall.
Someone told me last night, someone you know and I think respect, told me last night that Russell Bird was going to score 20 points because of the backcourt situation.
You know, I've said that there's going to be a game this year that he will shock the world and just bury 5 or 6 threes. We're all waiting. And I've never seen a fan base wait on one person, maybe going all the way back to the tall redhead kid who all of a sudden just couldn't hit a shot his senior year. Who am I thinking of? Help me out, Jack.
Adam Ballinger?
Yes, Ballinger.
Yeah, yeah.
His senior year.
Yeah.
He stopped shooting the ball.
Yeah.
He couldn't hit a shot. And whenever he would get it, the Iz Zone was just start saying, shoot, shoot.
Yeah.
That's where Russell Bird is going, where we're all waiting for, because people have seen, I mean, if you saw him in high school, he would nail it. Ghana and Costello, yeah, you need them to give you something. If one of those three guys steps up, this becomes a much more dangerous team where you'll actually have three people who can come off the bench and score. You know, Bird, every State fan would like to think that Bird can become their Nick Stauskas, that you see it, what he does for Michigan. And just that guy who can stretch the offense and hit the NBA three. And you're just not getting anything out of those three. I mean, heck, if you average, you know, a basket between those three, you're doing well right now. And that's unfortunate.
You know, when you talk about Russell Bird, it's interesting because I remember Tom Izzo saying after watching him one time in high school that he could be the best shooter he's seen since Sean Respert. We're still waiting for that guy to show up on campus. Now, obviously, he's had a lot of injury problems. Fairness to him, he really has had a tough road to go here. But John Beilein was in love with Russell Bird. And coming out of high school, there's no comparison to the acclaim. We talked about recruiting rankings before.
Russell Bird had Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio State. Everybody wanted Russell Bird.
Sure, Russell Bird compared to Nick Stauskas, it isn't close. And on the court this year, it also isn't close. Thanks so much, Bob. We appreciate it. Let's go back out to our phones, and let's go out to Atlanta. And this is Mr. Tate. Hello, mister.
Hey, how you guys doing? Mr.
Good.
Beard, how about you? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good, man. Definitely one of the only gentlemen here all the way down in the south in Atlanta, man, holding it down for the Michigan State Spartans. It's like I got to fight these guys off me every day.
But well, it should be a lot easier once basketball season.
It had to be a little easier after the bowl game when Michigan State beat Georgia for you in Atlanta.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm still getting some slack a little bit here and there about that. And folks calling on my radio show here in Atlanta talking a lot of trash about Georgia this and Georgia that, as they always do, being there all by yourselves. And I say, hey, well, hey, you can't say anything about the Big Ten as terrible as they were in football this year. Last time my Spartans saw a SEC team, you can't talk much trash to me. But nevertheless, I will say just a couple things. It's evident that Matt Costello definitely should have been in a red shirt type of season. And for me, it just seems like the way that this storyline is going to go. I heard you guys talking a little bit about Russell Bird, but I could just pretty much see it already. I don't know if it's going to have to come at home versus Indiana, obviously where he's from, but I just definitely think that by the time the NCAA tournament or the postseason, whether it be the Big Ten tournament or one of the final games in the Big Ten, as his career gets ready to come to a close, he will have that big breakout game. I mean, somewhere around 16 to 20 points pop probably, where it'll just – we'll see that player that we recruited years ago. Now, I cannot guarantee you that that'll happen at more than just one game, But it's just something on the inside of me after watching this team. I've been watching this team since I was a little kid. Of course, I'm still young now, 28 years old. But I've watched it happen so many times throughout the course of so many different people's careers, especially ones that have struggled at Michigan State. And I really think that that's something that's going to come through for Bird at some point where, you know, he'll get that standing ovation for having that really good game. Now, how much we're going to rely on Denzel Valentine sometimes, I consider a little bit of concern. I watched him when they came here to Atlanta to play Kansas. He seemed a little he's a freshman, of course, you know, hometown kid. He's got a lot of weight on his shoulders, of course, being that. He seemed a lot of out of sync sometimes here and there on the offensive and defense. And
that was the second game of the year, too, and now they've played 23.
And I think right now you're forced. You're forced to rely on him because he is your point guard, because you don't know what the Keith Appling situation is going to be. You don't know how long Travis Trice is going to be out. He's the only other person on this roster who can hold down the point. I mean, do you really want to see Adrian Payne bringing the ball up the court?
And there are times I think Tom Izzo walks down the sideline there and he looks at Dwayne Stevens and he says, you know, who are we going to put in? Fife? You know, they're just eventually.
Right. Do you want to see the walk-on come in?
Denzel played 21 minutes last night, and he was 3-for-5 from the field and had 3 rebounds, and I thought he played pretty well.
Well, to make my point, and I didn't mean to cut you guys off, to make my point, I was saying that I think that even though he is becoming a much better jump shooter, a much better defender, and those stats are kind of rising a little bit more and more, now he gets a little bit more comfortable in the system, it's just when it comes down to the postseason, where you don't really know as far as with Trice. And I really think that Gary Harris, as much of a load as he's taken on, especially with the scoring, he's really underappreciated. But what it is with Derek Nix and this up-and-under move, whatever it is about that, he already doesn't get up off the floor very long. And I know they were pressed for time, but I just wanted to...
Yeah, okay, thanks so much, Mr. Tate. We appreciate it. He had a lot to say there, Rico.
He did. The Nix up-and-under move, I mean... It is what it is. I mean, you see it coming, and it's just hard to stop if you're a defender. If you want to be brave enough to take the charge, you could probably get it about 50% of the time.
Yeah.
But you're going to pay for that.
Ask the cheerleader.
Right. You're going to pay for that if you really want to stand in his way. And it's almost like it goes in slow motion that you think you can strip the ball, but he's able to just make that move work.
You know, I got a lot of feedback for a column I wrote last week, I think I told you about, and some people, it wasn't all positive, some people wanted me to take a drug test. When I said that I thought Derek Nix had NFL potential as an offensive left tackle.
I remember that.
6'9", extremely long arms, quick feet, very strong legs, 1,100-pound bench press, and he'd be a project, it'd be a couple years in the making, but if I were an NFL team, I'd really love to see what I could do with him.
Jack, when you first told me that, I shook my head and I thought about it, and I'm like, you know, that's not a bad idea. That is thinking out the box. I never would have thought of that, but if you can make an argument that, because a lot of football coaches like tall guys, big guys who play basketball because they have quick feet. And you're right. If you could teach him the art of pass blocking at 6'9", long arms, agile feet, he may be a left or a right tackle that you could plug in for the next 6-7 years and get a lot out of him.
I saw Jonathan Ogden out there at the middle of the field before the Super Bowl as a Hall of Fame inductee. He looked just like Derek Nix. I want to thank all of our callers, all of our listeners today. I want to thank our special guest, Dane Fife, Michigan State assistant basketball coach, and, of course, our co-host, Rico Beard from Fox 2 in Detroit. Rico, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks,
we'll be back tomorrow, and my co-host will be Tom Crawford, my longtime radio partner, and we'll do a little bit of the Jack and Tom show for you. We'll be back with that and much, much more here on News Talk 870 Sports.
From NPR News.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.